A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The declinists are wrong and the optimists are right. We stick to the plan because the plan is working, and I commend this statement to the House.
Hello, I'm Christopher Hope, Associate Editor for Politics at the Daily Telegraph, and welcome to this special budget edition of Chopper's Politics Podcast. Before we get into the Chancellor's announcements on Wednesday, I wanted to take you on a trip down memory lane to when I joined the man himself for a chat in number 11 Downing Street.
If you're saying to me, do I want to get taxes down? Yes, I do. If you're saying, where would I prioritise? My first priority would actually to bring down business taxes.
That was Jeremy Hunt speaking to me on this podcast back in January. So did he deliver on that promise? With me now to discuss that and much more, such as who are the winners and losers of this budget, are my fellow associate editors at The Telegraph, Camilla Tominey and Gordon Rayner. Gordon, Camilla, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
Your first takeaway, Gordon Rayner, is it right there that Jeremy Hunt has delivered on his promise to bring down business taxes?
I think the answer is not really. As we know, he has stuck to his corporation tax increase, putting it up from 19 to 25%. That's pretty important for businesses. What he has done, which I think is interesting, whether or not businesses will accept it as being what he says it is, he has brought in a full expensing system. And what that means is that every pound that a company invests on anything from machinery to laptop computers to any kind of capital investment, basically, is fully tax deductible. So that comes straight off their tax bill. He says that bringing the corporation tax down to 19% didn't really stimulate investment in the way that people said it would. He thinks that this will stimulate investment. That is obviously remains to be seen, and it's up to businesses now to respond to that and say whether it is what they need.
That's right. Now, he says that would save, that's an effective cut in taxation of around $9 billion a year, doesn't he? But if you look at the actual numbers from the OBR, which I have done back in 2021, they're pulling in far more in corporation tax, $11.9 billion next year, $16 billion the following year, $17 billion the year after that. I mean, it's basically smoke and mirrors, isn't it, Camilla Tominey? He's trying to say here, we'll let you claim more back through your bookkeeping. But in fact, the top line figure is business is more taxed than before.
Yeah, I don't think it's great politics because people understand a straight corporation tax rate and what it is and how it compares to other countries. The Chancellor's talking about ours being amongst the lowest in the G7, but the whole point about maximising post-Brexit opportunities was to make us look fiercely competitive against France and Germany, not just vaguely. People look to Ireland as an example of a country that's attracting inward investment because of their low corporation tax rate. Also, it was only 5 minutes ago, indeed, when he was making his leadership bid, that he said he wanted corporation tax to be down to 12.5%. So actually,
you can't have it both ways.
You can't. And also, I just don't think he's also making this point that not all companies will pay this fully throated 26% and that it's gradual. But if you speak to anybody like Jacob Rees-Mogg, who has been very vocal on this issue, he talks about kind of basic Laffer curves and says, sorry, no, when we slashed the rate, the receipts did go up. So the Treasury ended up making more money.
There's nothing in here, Gordon Rayner, is there, to get the grassroots out and campaign ahead of the May local elections? Or is that? I mean, sorry,
no,
that's the wrong question. Or perhaps there is.
I think it's very much a sort of shoring up budget, isn't it, after the quasi-quarting budget of last year, which obviously the last said about
wasn't a budget, of course. It was a growth statement, Gordon.
Which at the time, for about 5 minutes after he made it, it seemed great, and then it all fell apart. So this I think is a sort of steady as you go budget. The interesting budget obviously will be the one next year ahead of an election when you would imagine he'll have stored up some money to cut taxes, and that there'll be a lot more cheer in that budget. I think for this one, it's a bit more of a one for the anoraks. You know, there are lots of interesting little things in there, but they are quite little things.
Yeah, Gordon's right, of course, Camilla Tomlin, isn't he? Because the words general election were not in the 7,700-word speech by Jeremy Hunt, because there's not an election going to be this year. But the feeling is next year. Now, a lot of these measures come in, don't they, next year. The help on childcare really kicks in September next year, right on the eve of an October election.
Yeah, I mean, if he's going to do tax cuts, that's when he's going to do them. I felt that this was very much a holding pattern budget. It's nothing particularly scintillating in there. Okay, he did pull out a rabbit from the hat in scrapping the pensions lifetime allowance altogether. We weren't necessarily expecting that. Is it going to enthuse people come the May elections? Well, no, not really, you know, because some of the kind of optical moves he could have made in terms of what people really understand when it comes to budgets, which are really things like the thresholds, the notion of fiscal drag, the base rate of income tax, the high rate of income tax, corporation tax as a number, VAT and whether it should be scrapped or reduced.
There's about 10 bullet points, aren't there?
I mean, these are all obvious things that people think of when they think of budgets, and none of them are in there. And it's all a bit sort of, I mean, as Gordon says, there's tinkering around the edges. Some of it's quite interesting, but none of it's going to blow your socks off, is it?
And Gordon, Camilla there mentioned this lifetime allowance. He's lifted that cap from £1 million to unlimited. And of course, in this room, really only Gordon Rayner would have £1 million pension fund.
More than that, probably.
He's a penny-pinching northerner in a way. Perhaps I'm not. But it only affects 15,000 very rich people, Gordon. It's hardly a vote winner.
Yeah, I think, look, there is an issue, as we know, with particularly with senior doctors who leave the profession in their 50s because they can't really put any more into their pension without being taxed to the eyeballs on it. And that is an issue. This will help, but it is, I think it's something like 8,000 public sector workers that we're talking about who are going to be in that bracket. So, yes, it's good news for
a few people.
It's good news for a few. It's good news for for the wealthiest, if we're honest.
And they've got skills, of course, they can bring back into the NHS, and that will help with
returnerships.
But he's framed it as trying to bring 3.5 million over 50s back into the workforce is what he wants to do. Mm. Well, we're not talking 3.5 million people here.
But if you looked at this from a younger perspective, you know, if you're 18 to 24, I think you'd say, what on earth is in this budget for me? Mm. I mean, I get with regard to the childcare changes, the jury's often out on the childcare hours because the nurseries that they're supplying care that costs more than the government can subsidise. Okay, it's a little bit of a help. I suppose it should be welcome that he's helping people to return to the labour market. But I think younger people just starting out who couldn't even imagine owning their own home, let alone having a pension pot of more than £1 million, will be scratching their heads and saying, well, what's in this for me?
I mean, that childcare announcement, though, of course, was a Liz Truss idea. She championed as children's minister, didn't she, back in the coalition government, Gordon? So perhaps Trussonomics is in there a bit.
Yeah, I think one of the things we need to point out, Camilla touched on it there, that some of these things aren't going to come in till possibly after the next election, which means they may not come in at all. There may be policies that he's saying to Labour, you know, I dare you to cancel this, and they probably will cancel some of them. You know, if you're a wealthy person trying to plan your pension, are you going to chuck everything into your pension, hoping that this price cap stays abolished? Not price cap, the overall lifetime allowance stays abolished, or are you going to think, well, hang on, Keir Starmer might reverse this policy in a year or so's time, and therefore, what's the point?
I wonder.
Similarly, with the childcare, Labour has to adopt that policy for it to mean anything.
I wonder if that announcement is this budget's 45p tax rate. It affects a small number of very rich people.
Maybe. Although, to be fair, I think the Centre for Social Justice, which was referenced when it came to some of the welfare reforms, when Ian Duncan Smith was working Pensions Secretary, he basically said that universal credit should have two parts to it. It should have the first part, which is about reforming the benefit system, and then it should have this additional part two, which is about helping more people with disability and health problems back into work. Now, that's kind of stealing the thunder from Jonathan Ashworth, Chaworth, who went to the CSJ and delivered a speech along these lines. And basically, the Tories have gone and stolen it. The other thing I observed is this idea of the OBR and the reliability of their forecast. You know,
that was very noticeable.
The Tories hate the OBR and say, oh, nothing they've predicted has ever come true. Well, one imagines they would quite like the OBR forecast that inflation will hit 2.9% by the end of the year to come true.
10.7% at the end of last year.
Presumably, they'd also welcome the news that far from going into recession, that actually we're to see growth for the next 5 years up to 2027. So in that regard, overall, that's useful for Hunt, isn't it, to kind of reclaim the Conservatives' mantle for fiscal competence, because voters seem to think that Labour are better at handling the economy.
I mean, miserly growth for this year of 0.2%.
Well, because, it's minus 0.2, isn't it?
No, it's impositive, but the OBR were forecasting net contraction this year. That won't happen now, according to the OBR. Yeah. And next year, those numbers go up quite a lot, and that could be pointing to an election in late 2024. Gordon Rayner, this time last year when we were in a studio, you and Camilla discussing the budget then, Rishi Sunak was Chancellor, and he said that the base rate of income tax would fall to 19p in April 2024. Yeah. Now, that was abandoned by Jeremy Hunt when he became Chancellor in October. Yeah. I've looked it up because I forgot that had happened. Yeah, it was abandoned then.
Yeah.
Don't you think that may happen next year now? Isn't that nailed on, given the numbers are improving?
Look, I mean, as we've said, you expect that there will be tax cuts in the next budget. That would be an obvious one to do. I think also one of the things that we have to mention is that there was no mention of public sector pay in this budget, was there? Now, is he storing up money to either settle these pay disputes in the next few months, or is he storing up money to give the public sector a pay rise in the next budget? I don't know. But certainly that was a huge sort of missing element from this. Just no mention at all of it.
Also, I mean, there's always this debate about fiscal headroom, isn't there? I think it was one organisation, was the Economic and Social Research Council or similar.
That's 100 billion, they thought.
166 billion. I mean, I appreciate, I discussed this with Liam Halligan, our economics commentator, and he was saying it's like putting your finger in the air. But you could look at it and say, okay, well, freezing fuel duty and duty on beer is apparently costing 6 billion. If you were a public sector worker, and I've just encountered them on Park Lane, walking here because
Lane, of course, where you hang out, the Telegraph.
No, I was walking from Bond Street to Victoria because tubes, and I had to get in on the Elizabeth line. But anyway, you would be one of those workers thinking, well, hang on a minute. Oh, right, so 6 billion can just be found for freezing the fuel duty, but not for our pay rises. I mean, there's going to be inflationary concerns about too many high pay rises anyway, and junior doctors asking for 35%. I mean, that doesn't strike anybody as
so. Let's flick through the winners and losers. Let's do winners first. Give Hunt his credit. Older workers or experienced workers, because we're all in our 50s, or you're not, Camilla. Me and Gordon are. We are experienced people, Gordon.
Apparently, we are the most experienced and the most valuable, Camilla.
Can I just say that I am in my 40s? I'm not even 45 yet, you two grandpas.
Oh, my goodness.
How dare you?
She might walk out now, Gordon. Right, we'll carry on, Greeley.
That's why you haven't shown much interest in this pension.
Well, the idea of getting to a million, I mean, God, chance for me if I
You'll start thinking about your pension a lot more.
Anyway, experienced workers, they're the A winner. We've gone over them. Parents, of course, we know about that. None of us have children of that under two. But anyway, they are doing well and it might help them. Energy bill payers, Gordon Rayner, they're doing well from this. Why is that?
Yes, I think one of the government's failures over this energy price guarantee has been that they haven't really shouted it from the rooftops enough. I think people are getting... Looking on the bank statements, they see that their electricity company is giving them a bit of money. Really, if the government, I think the government's missed a trick. It should say, you know, HM Treasury or Tory government.
£500 average bills?
I don't think people have necessarily really grasped how much help they're getting from the government. £94 billion.
Well, I'm looking it up now in the Red Book. £94 billion.
It's a huge commitment to bring people's energy bills.
Yeah, that's the NHS budget, isn't it?
Yes, no, it's not as much as that. But
nearly as much as that.
Well, certainly half.
It's a massive wedge.
Many times Home Office budget.
Don't forget that they did screw this whole thing up because they overshadowed the energy bailout by the budget.
This is quasi back in September.
Yeah, so from the very beginning, people haven't acknowledged that it's the government helping them out. I think they also think it's Martin Lewis helping them out.
Well,
although, as he has tweeted, to be fair, he got a letter from Jeremy Hunt saying the pressure.
When did Chancellor write to you before a budget?
All the time.
Does yours write to you, not to me?
But what was also interesting is Grant Shapps went on Martin Lewis's show to discuss some of this. and the energy bailout. So obviously that was quite a long time in the planning. The other thing I just wanted to say about this budget was they have to pitch roll everything, don't they?
Yeah.
What happened? I mean, we can't have any nasty surprises.
Well, there was nothing new.
Why isn't there any confidence in what they're doing so that they don't need to pitch roll each and every aspect? So we actually
name one thing in this budget that you didn't know before.
Right? Well, the pensions.
Yeah, but I mean, we had an inkling on it.
Yeah, I think they were trying to keep the childcare thing back. And in fairness, I think there was the Guardian find out about
it. I suspect that, having been through this mill 20 years, they told stakeholders on Monday what was coming up.
Yeah, yeah.
And some stakeholders then spoke to the Guardian.
Yeah.
That is what normally happens.
Yeah.
In fact, whenever I've tried to... there's been various, what we call them in journalism, inquests of why we didn't have that story. It's normally because people who are interested in this area or work in that space tell a reporter they know somewhere else, and that would be the Guardian, I think, in this case.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Complete guesswork, though. Drivers did well. Gordon Rennie, you're a driver. How's your Volvo doing?
It's doing all right, actually, Chris, as Volvos always do.
Good, yes, reliable cars.
So reliable.
5p cut in petrol and diesel duty.
It's retaining the 5p cut, isn't it? So people aren't going to see any great difference. I think it's £100 a year that it equates to from not putting it up. So I don't think people are going to be
running
out in the street in joy.
He put it in his pension.
I'll put it in my pension.
Yes,
absolutely. Or use it to pay off some more tax.
By the way, drivers' groups aren't particularly happy. You know,
why is that?
Well, you know, when every, just so that you people listening to this, when the budget happens, journalists literally get about 400 emails from different people reacting. Oh, it's the Association of Cardboard Boxes are reacting to the budget. And drivers' groups...
Don't be mean about the cardboard boxes.
Well, I'm just saying, it is a bit like that, isn't it? Every group under the sun has a reaction. And drivers' groups are saying no, because they want the VAT scrapped as well. And why hasn't he gone further? Blah, blah, blah.
Yes, well,
everyone always says, he could have gone further.
But it's done for entrepreneurs, white van people, Gordon. They're the groups who are being helped by this.
Well, like I say, £100 a year, it's not going to make or break people's household budget, is it?
I'm afraid you're calling it white van people,
you are
being
very
aware.
Woke, very aware.
Love that.
We're interrupting this podcast to bring you news of another Telegraph show we think you might like. It's called Planet Normal, and it's hosted by me, Liam Halligan.
And me, Alison Pearson. We're both Telegraph columnists who share the view that far too often those who shout the loudest on the telly just don't represent the views of normal people.
So take a trip with us to Planet Normal. We're joined by some stellar guests, well-known voices from politics, business and the arts.
All from different fields, but they have one thing in common. They're at the top of their game, but distinctly down to earth. The good news is I finally learnt what a podcast is and even how you subscribe to it. It's actually quite simple. Search for Planet Normal on your podcast app or click on the link in the show notes for this episode.
You don't really know what a podcast is, do you?
I am one. Look, I am one. Who needs to know what it is? I am one, okay? Shut up.
Pubs, Gordon?
Well, yes, supposedly. I mean, he sold this as the Brexit pubs guarantee, which I thought was a superb bit of marketing, if slightly flimsy. So he's saying that draft beer in a pub will be 11%. Have 11% less duty on it than beer in supermarkets, although he didn't particularly mention the fact that other alcohol duties are going up. So I don't think this is going to suddenly save your local pub from ruin. And, I raised a smile when he said Brexit pubs guarantee, because he's just trying to shoehorn Brexit in wherever
he can.
Although Diageo aren't happy about that. Again, in a press release, they said this didn't go far enough. No. This is a disgrace.
It never does.
I mean, you give with one hand and somebody takes away with the other, right?
Well, were you struck by Jeremy Hunt's remarks on Brexit? He said that Brexit was a decision by the British people to change our economic model. In that historic vote, our country decided to move from a model based on unlimited low-skilled immigration to one based on high wages and high skills.
Well, I mean, that's partially true.
Brexit means high skills.
Brexit means sovereignty as well. Brexit means different things to different people. Mm. It's interesting to have the interpretation from the arch remainer there, though. Yeah,
quite. But if you look at the numbers there, I'm trying to find it in my OBR book quickly, 240,000 net migration forecasts from the OBR. They say the Treasury say they've just taken numbers from the ONS.
Yeah.
But that's a lot more than tens of thousands, isn't it, in net migration figures?
Well,
Gordon. Do you remember that number?
As long as it's controlled migration, Chris. You know, it's as I say, it's all about controlled migration, isn't it? I think if you're a Brexiteer, if you're a Tory, you would say it's not necessarily the numbers that
matter. Controlling
it. It's the whether those people are coming here because they have got the skills that we need for this country rather than...
Yes.
And if you were Gary Lineker, you'd be saying none of that.
And that's what Boris Johnson might say. Leisure centres, money to keep the pools, your local pool warm, Gordon.
Well, yeah, I mean, hopefully with a data centre, as we learned earlier this week, you can stick a load of computers underneath your swimming pool and it heats the pool and you don't have to cool the data centre.
Chris, do you use your local leisure centre for swimming much?
No, I'm going to join one soon to a marathon training and I'm getting I get back so late, I can't go
but
to training.
A victory for Lidos.
Yes,
a victory Lidos, for Lidos. Depending on how you like saying
it. Yes, but that's £63 million pounds. Now, foster families did well. Do you follow this one?
Yes.
From next year, as a qualifying foster parent caregiver, will see the tax allowance rise to £18,000 a year from £10,000 a year.
Good idea, because I think the increasing number of people in care, people need to be incentivised to help children in need, particularly older children, because they are the ones that languish in the care system for the longest, because people want babies and toddlers rather than children.
Yep.
So I think give carers and foster carers as much support as they can get.
Totally right. Now, onto the losers. There's a longer list now. We know about British business. We think net they lose from the increase in corporation tax. I've been over that. New parents have to wait more than 2 years for the full 30 hours free childcare. It's in stages, Gordon. It's not immediate. So
no, as Camilla said, September 2024 before we get this this policy coming in full. I mean, look, if it sticks and if Labour keep it, or if the Tories keep it, whoever wins the next election, we're talking about 30 hours of free childcare, I think, aren't we?
It makes sense to delay it in the sense that a woman is usually off on maternity leave for quite a few months, and actually pay has gone up in that regard mostly. I know there's still a way to go. And also with paternity leave now, does mean that most people can at least fashion, a good 6 months off with a first child, do you think, nowadays?
Yeah, I think so. I also think a couple of things that struck me with this. The £600 incentive payment for new child minors, I'm not sure that's going to drag many people into a change of career. But I do think that the change in ratios from 1 to 4 to 1 to 5 carers to children is a good thing.
And that's a trust idea we allude to earlier.
Yeah, and they do it in Scotland. And so I'm not massively up on
worse care
Scottish childcare, but I assume it works there.
I don't think so.
Well,
I mean,
look, if it's
these places, these places also are Ofsted rated, and there is a massive scarcity of care for children. There's too many children and not enough nursery places. That's what's pushing the price up.
The key thing is, how will you both respond as parents? More children by both of you? Is it the tax benefit you're getting from having more kids?
I think 3 children and 2 jobs is enough for me, Chris.
Yes.
I don't know about you.
Technically, I don't have any children anymore because they're all adults.
Yes.
Technically is the important word there. They are adults, but don't
they're leeching your pension, though. This is your massive pension G rate. They are taking,
I think it's,
by the week,
yeah,
they are
right.
taking money.
It's definitely true to say that I could be paying more into my pension if my so-called adults' children weren't taking so much of it off.
Let's move on from that briefly. Taxpayers, right, here's a big loser group. Jeremy Hunt, maintain the freeze on income tax thresholds, inheritance tax, national insurance until 2028. And that, of course, it means what, Gordon Rayner? What's the key buzzword there?
Fiscal drag.
Yes, well done, Camilla.
Sorry.
That's 2 points for you. Right, you can answer the question, Camilla. Are you worried about this?
Well, I think I'm worried about it on behalf of the
nation. And what does it mean, by the way?
Fiscal drag is when income tax thresholds are frozen and therefore people who get pay rises end up paying more tax and therefore don't derive the benefits of their pay rise. And if they don't derive the benefits of their pay rise, they don't pay more into the economy and the economy stalls.
Yes.
In a nutshell. And
that's other view might be that the government does quite well by more tax receipts and spends our money better than we can.
I'm quite a low tax advocate. I'm quite Lawsonian about my tax. And actually, I think if we're talking about the so-called squeezed middle, then it does seem ludicrous to me that you've got people on 50 grand or above that are all in the higher rate of tax. I mean, I just think that's silly.
Well, a big number here from Ben Riley-Smith over in the House of Commons now, writing up our budget coverage. He says that this stealth tax rate via threshold changes will raise 29.3 billion by 2027, 2028. In numbers, that means 3.2 million people more paying income tax, 2.1 million more paying 40%, nearly the top rate, 350,000 more paying the 45p rate. That's a lot of people.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a very conservative way to carry on, does it? Let's be honest. I mean, that's the sort of thing you would imagine that a Labour Chancellor would have done.
Yeah, well, Gordon Brown did.
Exactly.
He invented the idea a bit, really, didn't he, for memory?
Yeah, exactly. So it's, I think you were talking earlier about, you know, what is there in this budget for, you know, traditional Tories to be shouting about. That's one of the things that they will be very disappointed in, I suspect.
Yeah. Now, Gordon Rayner savers. The Chancellor's kept the maximum that could be saved into these ISAs, these individual savings accounts, at £20,000 for this year, despite inflation, which basically means you can put less in.
Yeah. Yeah, again, I mean, well, we're talking about the losers here, aren't we, in the losers category. So, undoubtedly, that is, you know, savers are losing out for years now.
And
saving money has been almost not worth bothering with.
Despite inflation and interest rates going up, you know, but you still...
The banks don't give it to you, do they? The mortgages up, but not the savings rates.
No, interest rates have been so low that I'm not sure that savers are...
Many of those are pensioners, of course, not in the £1 million level, but pensioners with income they need from their funds.
Yeah, he could have done more, but equally, all budgets are at choices, and you know, that's what we're talking about, the choices that he's made.
Now, looking ahead into the summer, flyers, the air passenger duty goes up by 50p to £7 for domestic flights. That's from next year, 24-25. Long haul and ultra long haul flights going up by £1. That's another blow to.
Well, is budget travel still a concept?
Not really.
Actually, our colleague Robert Mendick recently went to Washington, I think, on £339 via Iceland.
I'm sure he didn't tell you about that a lot.
He told me about that a couple of times via Iceland. But the point is, I think since the pandemic, air travel has got so expensive. Yeah. I speak as somebody who's got a brother in Australia who couldn't come to see us last Christmas because the flights were just absolutely absurd. Therefore, you know, I would imagine the aviation industry that was 2 years ago completely on its knees. Would have liked to have had a bit of a helping hand from the government and, in fact, has ended up with a slap in the face.
Gordon,
It's a very slight
slap. When was your last holiday overseas, years ago?
I'm going off on skiing.
Oh, are you? Forgive me for being worried about your personal finances. Off you go skiing on Saturday.
I budget very carefully.
Someone's been bled dry by children at university. I'll say no more. Yeah, Gordon, anyway, enough of your holiday. I'm not thinking about that. Smokers, finally, they... paying £1.15 more for a pack of
biggest ever
fags.
Hike, I think. I'm not a smoker, so this isn't going to affect me. My instinct is to think, well, if it helps to stop people smoking, that's a good thing. But I think what we also know is that counterfeit cigarettes are one of the biggest growth industries for organised criminals. And I think what worries me a little bit is that, you know, you could stick £10 on a packet of cigarettes if you want, but you're going to force more and more people to... buy counterfeit cigarettes, and that's, you know, that would be my fear.
Doesn't do much to put children off vaping, which will therefore seem comparatively much cheaper.
That's where all the money's going, you know, these sweet vapes. Now, listen, it's now Wednesday afternoon. This goes out very quickly, this podcast. By the weekend, what are we talking about in this budget?
How many things will have collapsed?
Yeah, what's the pasty tax
There's no obvious omni-shambles moment, pasty taxes. I mean, I think some of the left are saying that this benefit to 15,000 very rich individuals to save more on their pension is a kind of 45p tax moment.
My wonder on that one, Gordon, is whether Labour might somehow try and stop that happening.
Amend the finance bill?
I wonder if they'll try to retain some sort of a cap, or perhaps keep a cap, but bring down the annual allowance back down towards the 40,000 mark. I don't know. I think it's going to be a difficult one for Labour to decide what to do with, because clearly it has been framed as keeping doctors in work, which we need. But I think the idea of, was it 9 billion we said this is going to cost?
Over 3 years per year, average year.
Yeah, I can see there being a lot of dissenters in Labour.
I think that's where it's going right now, Camilla Tominey, over in House of Commons right now. Ranulf Jayawardena, the former ally, or an ally of Liz Truss and a former cabinet minister, has said that this increase will make us less competitive, reduce investment in the long term, stifle job creation, all of which are required to go for growth.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll have more of that the weekend, no doubt. You'll have people who are on the side of Truss and Kwarteng having a real go at them about the corporation tax rate. No doubt a load of SME businesses and their representatives will start picking holes in the whole full capital expensing for 3 years plan. There'll also probably be some pro Brexiteers talking about how these investment zones, the 12 new Canary Wharfs that Hunt has come up with, don't touch the sides on their ambitions of turning the UK into Singapore on sea. Mm-hmm. I wonder also if the Green lobby might go nuclear on this whole suggestion that it should be described as environmentally sustainable. I thought the Green lobby didn't like nuclear very much.
Well, it's great British nuclear.
Oh, yeah.
That's not just nuclear. Yeah, it's great British nuclear.
I don't mind nuclear, but I don't think the Caroline Lucases of this world do.
I noted the Mail Sunday, a rival of the Telegraph, said at the weekend that they had a box saying, countdown to corporation tax catastrophe, 20 days to go. Well, by this Sunday, it's going to be 13 days to go, isn't it? And that's not going to go away.
No, it's not. But I was going to pick up on the nuclear thing as well, because I do think energy is, look, we've talked about the tax, the extra help for energy bills. Energy is a huge, huge thing at the moment. We do need to fix this long term. We were talking before we started recording this about, you know, the Tories, all governments get criticised for short-termism. He's trying to do something which is a long-term plan to give us energy security. And the idea of nuclear, and particularly he talked about small modular reactors. These are the type of things you have in nuclear submarines that we already make. You could use those on a local level. That seems to me that there is a lot to be said about that. But whether that will survive, certainly a change of government, if there is one, I don't know.
Actually, just very quickly, the only thing that probably won't come apart, I mean, I could be wrong, because usually people involved in defence, be they Ben Wallace, Tobias Elwood, or indeed Johnny Mercer, aren't backwards in coming forwards and in opinion. However, that $11 billion, which was, I think, what Wallace had asked for, is obviously over the course of the next few years, is going to be welcomed, as is that $30 million for vets. So what it's up to now, 2.25% of GDP, our defence spending. I think that will be warmly welcomed, not on the left benches, but on the right, simply because of the growing threat from China and Russia.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Ukraine war ongoing. I think also there's a bigger public appetite for more defence spending. It wasn't an issue 5 years ago, but now Putin's on the rampage. I think that's become something that people are perhaps discussing a bit more on the doorstep.
It's about $2 billion a year with $3 billion next year, but quite right.
Well, one last thing also, that you're talking about things that might fall apart. He talked about debt reduction. I think that's a hugely important area of any budget. And I think people who view it as sort of, you know, from the outside looking in, will be thinking, well, we've got this enormous debt pile. We can't just pretend that's not there. Mm. He has talked about trying to get it down, although only by 3 percentage points over the next 5 years, which doesn't seem a huge amount given that it's 90-odd% of GDP. I wonder if that will survive.
Yeah, the deficit falls every single year to 1.7% in 27 to 28, but debt, national debt, stays about the same. Mm. I mean, I know that Reagan famously said, oh, the deficit's big enough to look after itself. Maybe that's a bit... Does the public understand the difference between deficit or debt?
Overall, it was a very safety-first budget, wasn't it? Because they're still spooked by the reaction to Kwasi Kwarteng's growth statement last September. Just finally, Camilla Tominey and Gordon Rayner, if the Kwasi Liz Truss budget last September was a 10... Where, in terms of appealing to the right and Tory beliefs, where is this budget ranking on a scale of 1 to 10?
Six-ish. I mean, it's uninspiring.
What do you say?
Five.
Four or five-ish.
Yeah. It's limited in scope.
Yeah, I mean, this overcaution, it's too much, isn't it? I mean, the markets, a majority of 16 and a half. Exactly. The markets have already reacted to Kwarteng and Truss. The general consensus is that there were some quite good ideas, but terrible execution. And I think perhaps Hunt and Sunak are being overly safe. This whole we're working behind
and
the scenes.
And will there be time, do you think, Gordon Rayner, to do things which may help win them an election? Because that's why you're in power and that's why you're running the nation's finances.
I think the short answer is no, as we've discussed before, unless something unexpected happens that we haven't foreseen, which is entirely possible. But I think in terms of the things that they are in control of, it doesn't feel at the moment as if they're on a sort of route to turning it around. But, you know, a year or even a year and a half is still quite a lot.
The latest Savanta poll is that the Conservatives are 15 points behind Labour.
Yeah, which is better than it was. It's 22.
No,
but nowhere near as last summer when Boris Johnson was in power. Let's not go there.
But let's also just see what the polling looks like this weekend.
We're finishing at 5 p.m. on Wednesday. About now, Jeremy Hunt is addressing Tory MPs in the 922 committee. What would he be saying to them, Gordon?
I think he was saying... stick with me, you know, wait and see what we do next year. I think there'll be probably a certain amount of whinging, and he will say, well, look, this is my first budget. I couldn't afford to get it wrong. And he'll be happy if he just sort of,
you know, gets through it.
Yeah.
Camilla Tomlin.
He'll be saying, sort of, my heart says Thatcher, but my brain says Heath because of the very difficult circumstances that we're facing. You know, Gordon Brown kept on going on about the global financial crisis. He's talking about the cost of living crisis, saying that his conservative credentials are being sort of hampered by the fact that we've got this huge global problem. I don't think backbenchers are going to buy it. But what other alternatives do they have right now?
Nothing. Gordon Rayner, Camilla Tomlin, thank you for joining us this week on Chopper's Politics Podcast. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that's all for this week, listeners. Thank you to my colleagues, Camilla Tomlin and Gordon Rayner. Thank you to my producers, Louisa Wells and Giles Gear. Most importantly of all, thank you to you for listening. Please do share your thoughts on the Chancellor's financial announcements and what they mean for you by emailing me, chopperspolitics@telegraph.co.uk, or on Twitter. You can find us at Choppers Podcast. And I'll be bringing you the fallout from the budget over the next few days in my daily Choppers Politics newsletter, which is delivered straight into your email inbox every weekday. The link for that will be in the show notes of this episode. And don't forget to catch my weekly Peterborough Diary gossip column out on Fridays at 7 p.m. online or in Saturday's copy of the Daily Telegraph. And as ever, please do buy a copy of the Daily Telegraph if you can. You won't regret it. Until next time, though, cheerio!
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.